Greetings, 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 greetings. Hello, I'm here. A little later than I wanted to go, but Mr. Exterminator was here. We had him back. Why did we have to have him back? Because those little assholes were back today. So I think it's all taken care of now. I don't know. All I know is that for the first time today, I actually saw the little tiny hole where they are crawling through. So, like, imagine a bee crawling through a hole that's even smaller than the size of a dime. I managed to find where the hole was. Hopefully that will begin the journey away from all this stuff, but I'll let you guys know. But we are here. It is Wednesday night. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for bearing with me. This was the post-Forbidden Door episode of Dynamite here. This was actually the beginning of their residency at the 2300 Arena, the former ECW Arena. They're going to be in Philadelphia here for the next 2 weeks. I will be in Philadelphia myself next week as well. And as far as this show tonight, they set the stage for several matches coming up at All Out, only one of which is officially announced at this point, but you can see the formation of certain directions that they're going in here, including in the main event tonight. They had a very ECW-esque false count anywhere match between Darby Allin and Claudio Castagnoli, because the story here, the key story, is that Darby Allin is still trying to get a match with Jon Moxley, and Jon Moxley is saying no. He doesn't want to give Darby what he wants. He doesn't want this match with Darby Allin. And so tonight, Darby had to go through Claudio, which he did. And then Gabe Kidd came out and attacked Darby. And Darby, the babyface, ran away. He fled. He ran out of the building. And evidently, all of Darby's friends from the Lights Out Steel Cage match only a few days ago at Forbidden Door, apparently that's where their friendship starts and stops. They didn't think enough to come out here and help poor Darby in his time of need tonight. So Darby was very fleet of foot and he left the arena. But obviously, we are going to end up getting Darby Allin and Jon Moxley. He will probably have to go through Gabe Kidd. And if he has to go through Wheeler Yuta, I mean, he could do that in his sleep. And then at that point, we'll get the match. So they're slowly building to that. Hangman Page, and what I was interested in here, what direction are they going to go in with Hangman? Because do you go immediately into a rematch with MJF for the AEW World Championship? You could. I thought that's what they would do, just because I wasn't sure who else they would have lined up. And after tonight, the direction seems to be we're going to put off the eventual match between Hangman and MJF, the inevitable rematch, and go in a different direction with both men. With MJF, they are picking up with the Mark Briscoe feud. Mark Briscoe being, of course, someone who can take credit for MJF failing to win the championship on Sunday. So they're going to go off in that direction. Meanwhile, Hangman Page tonight was interrupted by Don Callis, who pretty much manages, I would say, 75% of the fucking roster at this point, at least as far as heels on the men's side. So take your pick as far as who's going to be lined up next to challenge for that title. My guess would be Konosuke Takeshita. But whoever it's going to be, we saw Kenny Omega and Hangman Page out there tonight. They were side by side fighting off the Callis family. So that seems to be the direction as far as the World Championship is concerned. The Hurt Syndicate screwed out of their tag team titles at Forbidden Door by Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. They are going off in a direction on their own. And then we have the official announcement tonight that in Toronto, at All Out, it will be Cope and Christian taking on FTR. That is the first and so far only match made official for All Out. So when you take that all together, they were able to forward a lot of stories here going into the next pay-per-view, which is good. They didn't do anything earth-shattering on this show. In many ways, this show was defined by the building that they were in tonight. And it was a very different atmosphere. You know, AEW runs a lot of smaller, intimate venues, none smaller than this one so far. So that was kind of the theme of the show. And then again, they tapped into some of that old ECW spirit that Tony Khan loves, because he was a big ECW fan back in the day. He said it himself. Tonight was the first time that he was back inside that building since 1996. So he was very excited. He was marking out. He was geeking out to be back in that building tonight. So he was able to kind of tap into that there in the closing match. What they should have done on this show tonight, and they did not do anything to, in any way, shape, or form, reestablish Wardlow. The man who was gone for 18 months made his return on Sunday at Forbidden Door as a member of the Callis family, and I said the one thing they have to try to avoid is him falling in line with everybody else and becoming background noise in that group, because you have 10-plus members of the Don Callis family. Some of them are out injured right now, like Brian Cage and Trent Beretta and Mark Davis. But you have almost a dozen members in this faction, and now you've added another member in Wardlow. The key is he's been gone for so long, you have to give people a reason again to care about him. So I was expecting at least we would get some sort of explanation. We would get maybe some words from Wardlow. We got nothing from Wardlow. He stood there in the background, exactly in the role that I feared he would be in. Because if he was going to speak or there was going to be some explanation, this would have been the show to give it. They didn't do it. That's a bad omen for him going forward. And as far as the women are concerned, the women's champions, Toni Storm and Mercedes Moné, not a lot of movement on either front with those two championships tonight on the show. But on the whole, I did think it was a solid episode of Dynamite. I did think it was a solid show. You know, not their best show of the year or anything like that. But Tony Khan tends to not do that anyway coming out of these pay-per-views. You know, there used to be a time in wrestling where it was like the Raw after a major pay-per-view or, you know, major event, and something big would happen or it would be like a big night. It's never been that way. With AEW and Tony, I don't know what it is with Tony, but coming out of these pay-per-views, more often than not, either the shows are just a pretty average episode of Dynamite, and sometimes they're even worse than average. It wasn't anything that people are going to remember in a few weeks, but I do think they set things up in motion for the next show, did what they had to do, made a few faux pas along the way. And we'll talk about what those are. But this is your AEW Dynamite review, your Dynamite Philly review. It is Wednesday, August 27th, your final Dynamite review for the month of August 2025. I want to point out something else here. During the show tonight, I actually wanted it to go up a little bit earlier, but because of my little issue here with our little flying friends, I had some other business to tend to. So you may not have been aware of it, but on the channel right now is a video. I've been meaning to get this up all week, dedicated to this whole Raja Jackson situation with Psycho Stew from Knox Pro. It's been talked about all week. There's been so much information out there. It's almost like it changes by the day. And there were so many different video clips surfacing. And there's just a lot of moving parts to this story that I'm almost glad that if it was going to happen, it happened immediately after I dropped the show this weekend, because it gave me a little more time to just sort of gather everything up. And certainly there have been a number of people who have also made some very stupid comments in the last few days. There's a 25-minute video up right now on the channel. You can check it out as soon as we're done here tonight, talking about this entire situation, the absurdity of it, one of the most disgusting things that I have ever seen inside of a wrestling ring. So please go ahead and check that out if you have not already done so when you are done here. Because I know people have been asking about that. It was just the timing of it. I wasn't able to get something up earlier, but I'm actually glad that it worked out this way. Excalibur, Taz, who was not overseas at Forbidden Door, with his knee replacement, traveling that far is not good for him. So he didn't make the pay-per-view, but he was back tonight in Philly. How appropriate. They were joined by not Tony Schiavone, but by Ian Riccaboni. They opened the show and welcomed us to the 2300 Arena. They pitched it to some video of what happened at the end of the pay-per-view on Sunday after the main event was over, when the Death Riders, all the heels, mauled Will Ospreay, wrapped the chair around his neck, left him for dead, right there in the middle of London. So we got some highlights of that. Excalibur said they understand that Ospreay was still being held for observation. And in the middle of all this, he gets cut off by FTR's music. They walk out with Stokely Hathaway. Cash Wheeler got right up in a fan's face in the aisleway, and this fan was not backing down. Their faces were like this. They were just mere inches from each other. This guy was wearing his FedEx work shirt like he had just finished his shift and gone straight to the show. And so this guy in his FedEx shirt is cussing out Cash Wheeler on television, on live television here. I don't know if that's a smart move or not, but he was certainly very passionate about something. Now, as far as the venue is concerned, more, like I said, more intimate than most of the smaller venues that they've been running. A lot of the venues they've run, that music hall in Cincinnati, for example, those are 1,000-seat venues, 1,100-seat venues, 1,500-seat venues. I think they were sold out tonight. They didn't even have 1,000. So that just shows you it's a smaller venue. I like the lighting. I don't like the acoustics so much, but I like it overall. It just, it gives the show a different vibe. I know a lot of people hate on it. They think it looks amateur. They don't like it. They think it sucks. And it's not the old ECW arena. It's been renovated since then. So like if you were a fan of the old ECW arena, if you were there, it's not exactly the same experience, but it just has a certain vibe to it that I like. I said the same thing when NXT ran there. NXT ran this very same building in November of last year. They did their own little ECW tribute show, which was actually a very lame, very boring show. This show was better than that show. But I remember commenting on the venue, and that was one of the things about the show that I liked. And yeah, it's the lighting. Everyone's all packed in. The lighting is probably better, honestly, on this show than a lot of other Dynamites, at least when they ran the bigger buildings, when they would intentionally darken it for obvious reasons. But I like it. It reminds me in a way of when WWE would run those old Shotgun Saturday night shows at different venues in Manhattan. I always liked that. So I don't know. I dug the vibe. If you didn't, cool. But I liked it. It's only 2 weeks. If you don't like it, they'll be out of there in 2 weeks. You'll live. You'll survive. So Dax got in the ring, and he was struggling to talk over all the boos. It also didn't help that his microphone wasn't working. And they were trying to tell him that it worked. He's like, I don't think it's working. They're like, no, it's working. So they got it working. He called what happened at Forbidden Door a miscarriage of justice, claimed the illegal man was the one who pinned him on Sunday. And he asked referee Paul Turner to come over here. Paul Turner walks over. He wants to have a chat with him. And he asks, how long have you been a referee for? And Paul Turner says, 27 years. And Dax called out Turner's wife. Oh, your wife is here in the audience. And he asked him, imagine going home to your family, to your wife, and saying that you failed because of an incompetent moron. He told Turner that it would be the worst thing in his life, and that's what he had to do to his family. And he demanded that Turner apologize and then reverse the decision and make them the AEW Tag Team Champions. So Turner said, my decision stands. And Stokely accused him of being incompetent and wanting to appease the online fans. He demanded that Turner jump off the fans' dicks and reverse the decision. They all got up in his face. Adam Copeland makes his entrance. He comes out. He looks behind him like he's waiting for someone. He's expecting Christian to be behind him, and he's like, where are you, man? He's not here. But it was a ploy, because in the ring, Christian snuck up behind Stokely. He gave him an unprettier. A brawl broke out. Officials poured out to try to separate them. Eventually, things got broken up. Christian grabs a microphone. So Cope and Christian are in the ring. FTR and Stokely are in the aisleway. And Christian says, at Forbidden Door, they took care of his problem. And so now it's time to take care of Adam's problem. Said, Dax, I understand you have a father. Said, Cash, I understand you have a father too. And the fans knew what was coming. Copeland did too. So he swiped the microphone out of Christian's hand. And he said, no. But then he said, all right, for the sickos. And he hands the microphone back to Christian, who told Wheeler, and that bitch is dead. So Wheeler tried to make a beeline for the ring. He had to be held back. I said, beeline. Can't get that off my brain. Copeland announced that it's set in stone. Tony Khan has made it official. September 20th, All Out, in their hometown of Toronto, CNC, Music Factory. Now, CNC against FTR. The match is official for the pay-per-view, and Copeland says he will take his pound of flesh. So a very predictable announcement. We knew this was coming. No surprise there. And we'll see what happens as far as the tag team championships are concerned. They certainly didn't give any indication that the titles are going to be involved here. They're going to add, you know, Brody King and Bandido. There was no indication of that. It doesn't mean they won't, but there was no indication of that. So it looks like it's going to be a straight tag team match, Cope and Christian against FTR, and should be a very good match. Again, it felt to me like the match against Kip Sabian and Killswitch, who were not on the show tonight, that match on Sunday was more of an appetizer, you know, to the main course, which is coming in Toronto. They weren't going to do too much on Sunday, and they're saving most of their shit for the next show. Should be a good match. Now, before tonight's main event, Darby Allin had a video package apologizing for those who wish that he died on Mount Everest. But he's still here, ready to take everything from Jon Moxley. And it wasn't about the AEW World title. It's not just about that. It says he's going to take Jon Moxley's career. He's going to destroy the Death Riders. And he talked about seeing the bodies as he climbed the mountain. Told Moxley not to step foot in the ring with him unless he is willing to die. At All Out, he's taking everything from Moxley. And in the video, Darby had ripped the bandage off of his mutilated ear from Forbidden Door when Moxley was jabbing it with a fork and he stuck the fork through the hole in the earlobe and he was twisting it and all kinds of sick shit. So he pulled the bandage off, and he was painting this wall with his own blood. And then it went up in flames. He's a very odd bird, that Darby Allin is. I know this is news to you. He's a very strange fellow. We had Jon Moxley against Daniel Garcia. Oh, joy. Jon Moxley and Daniel Garcia. Moxley was in the driver's seat. He was biting at Garcia's forehead at one point while he was in a tree of woe. Moxley joined him in the corner, started slapping Garcia, which only woke him up. And he bit Moxley in the leg. Was he a dog? Bit him on the leg before delivering a superplex. They traded pin attempts. Moxley exploded out with a cutter. Garcia, though, held onto the top rope to avoid a paradigm shift. Sank in a half crab. Moxley made the ropes. He went back outside. He got a DDT on top of the ring steps. Garcia, though, just made the count back into the ring at the count of nine. So he sidestepped a curb stomp. Garcia applied a dragon tamer. Moxley got out with a bulldog choke attempt. And Garcia rolled through. He hit a pile driver, but Moxley kicked out. So each man traded some inside cradles, and in the end, Moxley was able to squeak out the flash pin to win it. A flash pin ends this match here. Now, when the match was over, Moxley handed the microphone to, of all people, Wheeler Yuta. Now, it's going to be a bad night now. So he gives the microphone to Wheeler Yuta, who addresses Darby Allin, and he says that the answer is no. While this was happening, Moxley is on the outside of the ring, right? They're right in front of the front row there. And they're outside, and he's trying to whisper something in Garcia's ear. Either that or he's trying to make out with him. I don't know what's going on here. Garcia, though, was having none of it. Moxley and Marina Shafir, they left. Yuta stared down Garcia, who was upset about the loss. He threw a chair at the ring post, shoved the camera out of his face as he left. So Garcia's been racking up some losses. You know, he was in the four-way a few weeks ago, trying to become number one contender for the IWGP title. He lost, right? Nigel McGuinness got the shot at Forbidden Door. Tonight he wrestles Jon Moxley and loses on a fluke because it wasn't a decisive win, but he loses again. So you could see the frustration is mounting in Daniel Garcia. I was expecting a heel turn on Sunday. We didn't get it. I'm still expecting one. It's like a powder keg waiting to explode. Who's he going to turn on? I don't know. I don't know. Nigel's back at commentary, so it might not be him. But also here in this segment here, it looked like Moxley was trying to make the pitch for Garcia to join the Death Riders, which would be just fucking terrible. And it would be terrible because if they are adding new members potentially, all that does is it prolongs the life of the Death Riders. We don't need to be prolonging their life. We need to be speeding up the demise. It's been long enough. So I don't like the idea of potentially adding new members. I want to start peeling members off. So no, I do not want to see Daniel Garcia joining the Death Riders, because that's not going to be good for anybody. And Moxley again rejects Darby's challenge, this time for All Out. So again, we'll wait to see what Darby's going to have to do to convince this man to say yes to his challenge. We come back from break, and it was my absolute worst nightmare. Actually, I take that back. It was my second worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is what I encountered earlier today when I walked downstairs into my living room and I found, by my count, and I may have miscounted, there may have been more, but by my count, 16 Yellow Jackets flying around my living room, flying over my head. That's a nightmare. But the second biggest nightmare is them coming back from commercial break and Wheeler Yuta is still out there and he's got the fucking microphone. Why? Why is he still out here? Why does he have a microphone in his hand? Well, let's find out. He says that he's got a lot left to say, unfortunately. Says that he used to live in this city, and he worked the ring crew in this building as a teenager. Yes, 16. 16 Yellow Jackets. Indoors. Very angry. Very pissed off, moving around so fast that you could literally hear their bodies smacking the light and smacking the window and smacking the ceiling. Oh yeah, they were mad as hell. I think they know that I tried to kill them the other day. So I think what they did was they called all their little Yellow Jacket friends, and so they all kind of ganged up on me today. I don't know how I didn't get stung. That's okay though. I think word spreads. Word travels. They were not very happy with me. So Yuta says, again, he's got experience in this venue here because he used to work on the ring crew when he was a teenager. He brought up Will Ospreay being taken out on a stretcher at Forbidden Door, Chuck Taylor's career ending, and he brought up Bryan Danielson's career ending as well, which he took credit for. And then the lights went out, and I genuinely did not know what was about to happen. I had no idea. Maybe the earth was going to open up and swallow Wheeler Yuta. I don't know. The lights go out, and they flash the Hook signal. So it's Hook. They've been playing these little vignettes, right? Coming in and out of commercial breaks the last few weeks, so you knew he was coming back. We just didn't know when. And Hook walks out to his new music. He walks out to his new crooner music. I couldn't figure out the word that I was looking for. And I'm typing shit in. I'm like, what is the word I'm looking for? Crooner. Crooner. So think like Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby. It's that type of music. Action Bronson is no more. Hook's Action Bronson theme is done. Now he's got this new music, which absolutely does not fit him at all. He walks out here at the old ECW arena to fucking crooner music. And I had to write down the name of it. In case anybody wants to listen to the song, I'm not even going to pass judgment on the song itself. I haven't listened to it in full yet. I only listened to the first, like, 30 seconds. But if you're interested, it's a Swedish musician named Jay Johansson. In case you couldn't tell that he's Swedish. And the song is called Tell the Girls That I'm Back in Town. That is the name of the song. It does not fit. It just doesn't fit. I'm sorry. But this is what has been playing in these vignettes these last few weeks. So he walks out and he circles the ring, gets into the ring. Yuta charges. He misses. Hook sinks in Red Rum. And then he waffles him with a Superman punch. And then, which by the way, a Superman punch just hits differently when you have a Roman Reigns throwing a Superman punch, when you have Hook throwing a Superman punch. I mean, it just doesn't, I mean, come on. it doesn't have the same impact. I'm just saying. So that's it. Yuta scurries away and Hook leaves. This was not much of a return for Hook coming out here and beating up Wheeler Yuta. I mean, that's kind of a given. But that's how they decided to bring him back. I suppose it was a cool moment, though, for him to debut. I'm almost positive this would have been his debut here at the old ECW arena. I mean, this is the venue where his father really built up his name and built up his reputation. And his dad was right there sitting at ringside. So for him, I'm sure it was a very cool moment. And I guess he's not in the Ops anymore. There was no mention of the Ops. The Ops was on the show later on. He didn't come out. It's just, you know, look, the Ops dropped him like a bad habit. He got hurt. Remember, he was puking in the ring that time. He was concussed. We didn't see him. They won the Trios titles, and they kind of forgot about him. And it's like, all right, I guess I'll go do my own thing. So that's it. They wash their hands of it, and that's it. Hook is no longer affiliated with the Ops. We go to a pre-tape vignette from the aftermath on Sunday of the World Championship match between Hangman Page and MJF. And he's in the back, and he's all tired and beat up after his match. And he said that he threw down the casino gauntlet contract case, said the fans chanted, "You deserve it," while he was bleeding buckets and he had his AEW World Championship won. The title was back in his grasp until Mark Briscoe cost him everything. He pointed out that he can no longer cash in his contract anytime he wants to, because Tony Khan went and changed the rule. And so therefore now he has to give 7 days notice. Now that's interesting, because I wasn't sure if this was retroactive or not, because Tony Khan made the comment, I think going forward, there's a new rule change for the casino gauntlet contracts, which is that you can't just cash it in Money in the Bank style. You can't just come in after somebody just had a match, 30-minute match, and they're beat down and they're tired and they're hurt, and then you kind of sneak in there and you cash in. It's Money in the Bank. Just call it what it is. You're just copying the Money in the Bank concept, which in and of itself has become a crutch. And honestly, it is just so played out that I wish they would do away with it for a while. And they're not gonna do that. I get it. But that's what it was. So Tony Khan has decided that by listening to fan feedback, he's going to make a change. And the change is that from now on, from this point forward, if you win the casino gauntlet contract, you have to give at least 1 week's advance notice so that he, as the promoter, can promote this big world championship match, which from a promoter's perspective actually makes sense, right? You would want to be able to promote a big world title match. Now, I had a whole argument about this with JD on TNT last night. He thinks it sucks, and why would you change it? It's just you're taking away all of the element of surprise. You know, my attitude is, all you're doing is copying Money in the Bank. And maybe I'm alone in this. I just think it's a tired concept to begin with. So I love the fact that they're at least doing something to differentiate it from that. I don't mind it. Instead of sneaking up like a bitch every single time, you know what? Yeah, force them to call their shot. Whether it's a week, whether it's at the next pay-per-view, I want my title shot. Fine. What's so bad about that? At the end of the day, you're still getting a world championship match. By winning the casino gauntlet, what you are receiving is a guaranteed title match. Why does it need to be anytime you want? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right? Who gives a shit? I think it's a change for the better. I just didn't know that it applied to MJF, who already won the contract. That's kind of unfair, honestly, when you think about it. I mean, that's kind of shitty, but I guess it's retroactive, so he's not very happy about that. He said he would end Mark Briscoe, and then he would cash in his contract. He said it wouldn't just be for the title. It would be for Hangman's soul. And so he's going after Mark Briscoe before he does anything with Hangman Page. You know, All Out did feel like the likely destination for a rematch between Hangman and MJF. Him going after Briscoe first, it leaves a spot open for somebody else in the meantime to challenge for the championship. We would get kind of a hint about who that might be later in the show. Still not sure who. But, you know, I don't mind that. If they want to put that off for a little while, I don't know if they would want to wait until World's End. World's End was the event 2 years ago where MJF got fucked out of his world title. And they did the devil reveal with Adam Cole, and then everything fell apart. But that was the big angle that they had built up. So, in a way, it would kind of make sense if MJF were to cash in his rematch on that show And if he's going to win the championship, it would be 2 years to the event where he lost it. So what that would mean, though, is that you got All Out, you got Wrestle Dream, and then you have Full Gear. Are they going to be able to find enough people other than MJF to challenge for the championship before circling back to MJF? I don't know about that. I just don't know if I see them waiting that long. Chris Statlander tagged with Harley Cameron to take on Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. The heels, they isolated Harley here through a commercial break. When things come back, Statlander immediately got the hot tag. She planted Penelope with a twisting fisherman's buster for a near fall. Bane made a blind tag. She got a high stack German on Statlander, but Cameron made the save. The heels went for a double moonsaults, but both missed. Statlander and Cameron, they connected with Russ kicks. There was a combination pendulum back suplex face buster that connected on Ford, but Bane flew in with a running boot. Then she got met with Statlander's discus lariat. Everybody was down, so we got a reset here in the match. Bane and Statlander, they were slugging it out with forearms until Penelope made a blind tag. On the floor, Harley Cameron took out Megan Bane with a tilt-a-whirl DDT. Inside, Statlander wrapped Ford up like a pretzel. It was basically like a triangle choke of sorts, and she got the submission win. So when the match was over, Bane attacked Cameron on the floor, went back inside to fight Statlander when Willow Nightingale hit the ring. Even though Statlander was doing okay, she was holding her own in there with Bane. Ford pulled Bane to safety. So now we have Harley Cameron is in the ring in between these two women, these two former friends, right, who have been on shaky ground now for many months. And she hugged them both. And she raised both their hands. And then the announcers questioned if Harley would be the one to finally reunite the two former friends. So long as they move on to whatever the next phase of this story is going to be, great. Because this has just been dragging out now for so long. It's like, okay, whatever's going to happen here. Is someone going to go heel or are you going to reunite these two? I don't get the sense they're going heel. So if you're going to do the reunion, can we speed it up? We speed it up a little bit. Now, my sense is that, not if, but when, Tony Khan introduces women's tag team titles, we know they're made, right? They're sitting in an office somewhere. He's just been waiting to get some of the women back because he said that that division has been plagued by injuries. So Mina Shirakawa, for example, she's going to be wrestling Athena on Friday at, is it Death Before Dishonor, I believe, for the Women's Championship in Ring of Honor. She had a broken hand. So now she's back. We got at the pay-per-view on Sunday, we got Jamie Hayter back, who I don't even think was mentioned on the show tonight. Now that I think about it, that's another fail. But since they're starting to get some of these women back, we may soon see women's tag team titles. And if we do, my guess would be that Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale are probably the leading contenders to become tag team champions right out of the gate. So it's just a matter of bringing them back together, which they've just been teasing out for so long. Now, speaking of the ladies from this segment here, we move on to Mercedes Nine Belts. Mercedes Moné was successful. She defended her TBS championship at a four-way on Sunday. She's got nine titles. Eight of them were on display. They were all arranged on a table in the ring as Renee introduced Mercedes out to the ring, and she had her TBS championship around her waist. So she gets in the ring and she's counting off all of the titles that are on the table in the ring. And Renee ran down her resume over the past month, all the titles that she's won. Mercedes calls herself the greatest of all time, the history maker, the record breaker. She said Ultimo Dragon had 10 titles. So that's a record that she's going to smash. And she will. She'll at least tie him. I don't know if she'll beat it, but can she win one more? Oh, I think so. I think that's safe to assume. Believe me, there are plenty of indie promoters out there who would be dying to give their championship to Mercedes. If she wants a 10th title, it will not be that difficult. Any woman with a title, she says, I'm coming for you. Fucking women. I mean, she's tweeting some of the men. Kyle Fletcher posted a picture the other day of him with his TNT title, and then who's the first fucking person in the replies underneath? Boy, it's a mighty fine, mighty nice belt that you got there. She's going to run out of belts at some point. She may have to start going after the men's titles. Pick two partners. She could be a trios champion. So Renee brings up that Alex Windsor, even though she didn't win the championship in the four-way, she also didn't take the losing fall. But she brought up how on TV last week, Alex Windsor tapped Monet out on Dynamite, to which Mercedes questioned if Renee was stupid or dumb. She said she wasn't tapping out. She was trying to squash a bug in the ring. Yeah, I know the feeling. So Mercedes said that she was a better Rev Pro champion than Windsor ever was. Said that maybe Windsor is jealous that her man was doing her dance. That being Mr. Bruv. If Windsor keeps it up, she'll put her in a hospital bed right next to her husband. And Monet has said that she has enough. She's done enough talking here. All she wants to do is dance, which she did, and she danced to end the segment. This segment sucked. This was a very lame segment here. She may have nine belts, but if this segment proved one thing, it's that it does not make for interesting television. This segment proved it. And, you know, look, they hinted that they're going to stick with this Mercedes and Alex Windsor feud. That was another question I had coming out of Forbidden Door, right? Three more women defeated. Who's next? You got to get her to October. You know they're not taking that title off of her before she breaks Jade Cargill's record. I think that's October 10th. Well, you got, what, a month and a half? 2 months? I mean, she doesn't necessarily have to lose it on the 10th. She may hold it till the end of the year for all we know. So we have at least two more months of her with that championship. Who the hell's left? Who's left? Who's next? It's like Goldberg in the division. Who's next? So they're going to stick with Alex Windsor for now. I guess that's going to be the next match. And Alex Windsor was not there. She never came out. It's possible she's just back home with her man as he is preparing to, I guess, navigate whatever is next for him. I don't know when he's having surgery on his neck. It may not be imminent, or maybe they're in the process of scheduling it and picking a date. I don't know, but she never made an appearance on this show. We then got a pre-tape promo from Mark Briscoe. He was down in Sandy Fork, Delaware. And he said that the 2300 arena is extremely important to the Briscoe brothers, but he couldn't be there tonight for a very good reason. And he showed off his newborn baby in his hands. It was baby Mac Briscoe. Mark Briscoe, and now we have Mac Briscoe. By the way, that is baby number 9 for Mark Briscoe. Okay? Baby number 9, when you have enough kids that you can fill up an entire Don Callis family, I think it's time to stop. I think that's a good time to stop. I'm just saying. The next thing Briscoe has to say, he said, is not for baby ears, and he hands the baby off to somebody who we can't see off screen and says, take this and go. Reminded me of Macho Man at WrestleMania 8. After he won the championship from Ric Flair, and Flair kissed Elizabeth, forced himself on her after the match, and Savage just lost his fucking shit. And there was this great post-match angle where Savage dove onto him and perfect, and Flair double-teamed him. And in the back, Savage is just a basket case. Now, I'll never forget, like, they're trying to, I think Mean Gene, maybe Mooney, is trying to interview him, and he just hands the belt to Elizabeth. This is yours. Take it and go. This is yours. Ric Flair, you got the whole package here. He's like fucking psychotic eyes and everything. Man, we don't get promos like that anymore, man. What happened to real wrestling promos? It just hit me, like, what the fuck? I'm watching all this content on The Vault, like, every week. And there's, like, all these old, like, 80s and early 90s promos, mid-90s wrestling promos. And I'm like, how did we go from that to, like, the general, like, wrestling promo that we see today? Like, how do we get that? Is it the drugs? Is it just that simple? Is it the cocaine or is it something else? I don't know. I don't know. But we need more of that. See, that's money. That's what that is. As opposed to Monet and whatever the hell that segment was before this. So Briscoe said, it's been 1 week since MJF tried to set him on fire. So he's taking all of MJF's hopes and dreams and setting them on fire. which is exactly what he did at Forbidden Door. And he said that MJF has always said that Mark Briscoe can't win the big one, which got Briscoe thinking about the TNT champion, Kyle Fletcher, who he is 2-for-2 with, and he challenges him to a TNT title match in Philadelphia, because again, they're going to be there for another week. And he questions if Fletcher will man up. Now, it would seem unwise to me that this man would cost MJF the world championship at Forbidden Door and think that MJF would not get involved if he tries to challenge for the TNT championship. Like, you poked the bear, and then you want to get a title match of your own. I don't think that's going to end the way that he thinks it's going to end. Probably not going to end well for Mark Briscoe next week. Although I don't think they made it official which show it would be on, if it's going to be a Dynamite match, Collision. I mean, it's got to be a Dynamite match, especially if MJF is going to possibly be involved. It needs to be a Dynamite match, but I don't think they made that official yet. Yes, Ufman, the Hart family. So Stu and Helen Hart, did they have 12 kids or was it 13? Maybe it was 12. They had at least 12 children. Owen was the youngest. Mark Briscoe is, he's catching up. This week's episode is sponsored by Green Chef. When you think about summer, you want to have your best beach bod, right? And what you eat has a lot to do with that. But even when the summer comes to an end, that doesn't make it okay to just start eating whatever you want, regardless of how bad it may be for you. Like, that's my attitude. I want to make sure I'm eating well all year round because my health is important. It's about adopting eating habits that I know I can stick to. That's the beauty of Green Chef, the number one meal kit for clean eating. Green Chef makes it easy to spend less time in the kitchen and more time doing the other things that you would rather be doing this summer. And with their new Heat and Eat meals, you could enjoy a delicious meal in under 3 minutes with fresh, organic, seasonal produce and 100% responsibly sourced proteins to help you feel your best. We're talking real ingredients. Enjoy salads ready in just 5 minutes, protein-filled breakfasts, or nutrient-filled smoothies to fuel your entire day. With 80-plus dietitian-approved weekly meal options, Green Chef makes it easy to find meals that fit your lifestyle, from Mediterranean and gluten-free to plant-based and protein-heavy to gut and brain health and calorie-smart options, too. The recipes change every week, and with week-to-week flexibility, you can adjust your plan to match your mood and your schedule. As someone that has tried Green Chef for myself and had meals sent right to my doorstep, I can vouch for how easy they are to make and the fact that they passed my taste test. One of my favorite meals I had a while back was their chicken with basil pea stew with roasted red peppers and jasmine rice. It was fantastic. It's hard to mess up a chicken dish with me, but it has been done before. Thankfully, this wasn't one of those times. As far as getting everything together, it was super easy. You know, they list out everything you need, any food allergens that you need to know about, which I appreciate. And it was a great time saver for me before getting ready to go to work and do some live streaming for you guys. Make this summer your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50solomonster and use code 50solomonster to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50solomonster at greenchef.com/50solomonster. We had a Tony Khan special after this. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You know, sometimes in Be the Booker, we book a Tony Khan dream match. We got one here. An all-star eight-man tag team match. You know how many of those we had on the pre-show on Sunday? At least two. That was just on Sunday. We got these every week. The only shocking thing about this is I was waiting for how much money was going to be on the line. They never announced the purse money. I was waiting for the stipulation that this is going to be the $657,000 All-Star 8-Man Tag Team match, but there was no money mentioned. So we had Don Callis walk out into the arena, into the aisle, and he had Wardlow with him in a suit. It's like, oh, there's Wardlow, the guy who we haven't seen on television in at least a year and a half. And just made his return on Sunday at Forbidden Door. And there he is, like a bodyguard for Don Callis. Doesn't say anything, but he's standing there. And Callis did all of his long-winded ring intros for his men, first with Hechicero. And again, he said, "Yo soy Hechicero," which I guess that's the running gag at this point. But what he thinks it means is what he thinks it means. But he comes out, Josh Alexander, Kinosuke Takeshita, and Kazuchika Okada. And they went up against Speedball Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, and the new tag team champions Brody King and the Ring of Honor world champion Bandido. There's a lot of belts. There's a lot of belts. You have to navigate a lot of different championships here in this company. I mean, my God, how many champions did we have on this show tonight? How many titles were represented on this show tonight? And you wonder why championships feel like they just really don't mean anything in this company or really in wrestling. But especially in this company, you had the AEW World Champion was on the show. We had the Tag Team Champions were on the show. We had, it's a vignette, but we had the AEW Women's World Champion was on the show. We had the AEW Women's TBS Champion on the show. We had the Trios Champions on this show. We had, I forgot to mention with Mercedes, not only the TBS Championship, but eight other championships. Now, granted, they're not AEW belts, but they sure did a segment where you had eight belts sitting on a table in the middle of the ring. Doesn't really feel like championships mean a whole hell of a lot these days, does it? It's almost like the more championships that you feature on one television show, you kind of water all of them down. And I didn't even mention the Ring of Honor titles, which they were promoting because Death Before Dishonor is on Friday. So, Bandido's the Ring of Honor world champion. Athena was in a promo tonight as well in a video. She's the Ring of Honor women's world champion. It's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. It fucking sucks. It just does. So, Hechicero and Bandido, they're wrestling on Friday for the Ring of Honor World Championship. So, we got a little preview of that here. After a break, Brody King made a hot tag. He cleaned house, including Okada taking a boss man slam. Hechicero dodged a corner cannonball. Josh Alexander hit a stalling German. Takeshita flattened Mike Bailey with a pop-up powerbomb, but Knight saved his partner with a pendulum DDT. Bailey and Takeshita, they tagged in. And Bailey took his head off with a kick, but Takeshita answered with the haymaker forearm. Takeshita tried a sunset flip. Bailey countered into the backflip double knees, and the entirety of the Callis family made the save for that. As Okada was going, and this is the key here, as Okada was going to charge at Mike Bailey in the corner, because Takeshita did a move into the corner to Bailey, so then Okada was going to follow with a move. But as Okada was following into the corner, Takeshita pulled Bailey out of the corner because he had another move in mind that he was going to do. And instead, what ended up happening here is that we had a face-to-face. We had a little bit of tension between Okada and Takeshita. So Brodito put a stop to it. He mowed down Okada. Hechicero low-bridged Brody King, but Bandido flew out over the top rope with Hechicero outside. Takeshita hit a somersault plancha onto the pile. One of the people he took out was his partner. Poor Hechicero. Back inside, Bailey tried a flash pin on Alexander, but Okada made the save. He tried for a rainmaker. Bailey ducked, and Okada ate a springboard clothesline by Knight. Alexander was planted by Bailey, who went up top for a shooting star press. Alexander, though, moved and got an inside cradle for the win. There was some fun action here in this match. I don't really care about that as much as I do the face-to-face portions of this match that we got between Okada and Takeshita. The tension that they're continuing to build here between these two men. That is what interests me more than anything else that we saw here in this match. The only question is, when do they want to do the match? Is this something, because they're just overtly, like they're telling you there's something going on between these two guys. They don't like each other or trust each other, and we're building to a match between them at some point. All Out is coming up in a few weeks. Do you do the match at All Out, or do you continue to drop hints and save it? Save it for one of the two final shows of the year. Or three. I mean, I guess you could do it in October at WrestleDream if you don't do it at All Out. But I've been saying all along, like, the only person who should take that unified title from Okada is Takeshita. Like, when they meet, it shouldn't be a case where Okada just beats him and that's it. If he beats him and that's the first of, you know, two or three matches they have, and in the end Takeshita wins, that's fine. But as long as he wins the championship, that should be the end goal here, is to make him out of this. Make him a babyface. Because at that point, if he isn't already out of the Callis family at that point, that should be the catalyst to bouncing him out of that group. Because this group has now gotten so big and so bloated that as they continue to add possibly even more members, it becomes more and more difficult to stand out. Kyle Fletcher will stand out because clearly they are building him up as a real major, like, young star, but he's got the TNT championship, right? He's got a title, so he's okay. But if you're almost anybody else in this group, like, you're outside of Okada and Fletcher, you know what? You're in some trouble here. Very easy to just fade into the background. That's the role that Lance Archer has. That's the role that, you know, Rocky Romero has. It's the role that Josh Alexander has now settled into. Sad, but it's true. Which, it's good that they gave him a win here, at least, because they gave him something. At least he got some shine here out of this. But it brings me to Wardlow. And speaking of forgotten members here. So again, Wardlow made his return on Sunday. And I had forgotten about him. It'd been so long and his name wasn't even mentioned. Last time I heard his name mentioned was about the American Gladiator stuff. He filmed that show, which Miz is hosting. I don't know when it's airing. So I know he did that. And I know he had a knee injury many months ago that he was still recuperating from. And so it's like, okay, great. He's back. What does it mean? If you don't have a plan for him, it doesn't mean anything. Him joining the Callis family, well, sure, it could be something, right? It's working out okay for Okada and for Fletcher. But is it going to work out the same way for Wardlow? Let's see what happens on this first Dynamite coming out of Forbidden Door. Because if ever there was a time for us to hear from Wardlow or hear from Callis about Wardlow, it would be this show. And we got nothing. Nothing. We got a fleeting mention from Excalibur on commentary that you may notice Wardlow is back. You know, so he acknowledged that he came back at Forbidden Door, and that was it. He is already in the background. Now, I understand it's only one show, but it was an important show. It's a show where you need to make a big deal about the fact that this guy just came back. Because if you don't, then that tells me that you don't see him anymore as one of your rising young stars. He is an AEW original. You don't see him anymore as having the same value that you thought he had 3 or 4 years ago. And I think he can still have that value. I'm not sure Tony Khan sees it the same way. Because I would make a big deal about the fact that this guy came back. They didn't do that. It's a bad sign. That's a very bad sign. This was a fail. This was the night to shine a light on this guy. And instead, he was in the darkness. He was in the shadows. Now, after this, we had the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page, power walking to the ring. And Hangman said, before he gets started, he wants to thank Will Ospreay for everything that he's done for himself and everything that he has done for AEW. He genuinely feels very sorry for everything that has happened to Ospreay since All In. He says that while he's gone, all of us will miss him. So he says, recover, heal up, and when the time is right, come back and do what you do best. And I look forward to you challenging me for the AEW World Championship. Now, regarding the championship, MJF had the chance to challenge for it, and he failed. He threw everything that he had at Page, and he still failed. Now he has to give a 7-day notice to cash in that contract, but whenever MJF chooses to sign that contract, he'll beat his ass before the ink is even dry. So he's interrupted by Don Callis, who has something very important to say to the world champion. So we have a long history, you and me. Says Hangman won his first AEW World Championship from Don Callis. Not from Don Callis, but from someone that Don Callis represented at the time. A good friend of his, a good old friend of Hangman Page's. He said the only reason he took it from him was due to having a weakling. He called Kenny Omega a weakling here. Callus wants that belt back in the family, and Paige doesn't get to decide who he gets to face because there's a whole locker room back there wanting a shot, and he knows that because he has half of them under contract. Ain't that the truth? Feels like it, doesn't it? It's not a matter of if, but who will take it from him, and out walks Rocky Romero, Hechicero, Josh Alexander, and Lance Archer. They all surround the ring. Hangman is not afraid, though. He hits slingshot dive out onto Alexander, but the numbers immediately overwhelm him. It's too much, right? He took out Josh Alexander, but everybody else pounces on him. And Callis hands Rocky Romero a steel baton to use as a weapon because Jet Speed came out, but then Mike Bailey got blasted with the baton. So Kenny Omega's music hits, and he comes out. He looks very weird without any of the facial hair, but he comes out and he connects in the aisleway with a V-trigger to Hechicero, snapdragons to Rocky Romero and Josh Alexander in the ring. Lance Archer tried to choke slam. Omega got the baton, though, so he was able to get free. Jet Speed hit dueling dives out onto Romero and Alexander. Hangman and Omega, they dusted off a page from their old playbook here. Then they hit a combination buckshot V-trigger to Lance Archer. And then Omega and Hangman hugged. Jet Speed joined them, and the babyfaces stood tall. Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, who were a tag team, by the way, in one of the greatest matches in AEW history 5 years ago, still to this day. Obviously, they have a long history together. Friends, enemies, some great matches as tag team partners, some great matches against each other. It's been a while since we've seen the two of them affiliated in any way like this, so I think that there's definitely a Dynamite main event in there somewhere that they could do in the next few weeks. This is what I was thinking before they made the announcement of what we're actually going to get. I'm like, okay, you could do Hangman and Kenny Omega as a tag team against two members of the Don Callis family. That would be kind of an attraction. And then we got the announcement. We got the announcement that Tony Khan couldn't help himself. And Tony Khan has announced, I'll give you one guess. What do you think he announced? If you guess that he announced another all-star eight-man tag team match, ding, 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 you are correct. You win the prize. We're getting an all-star eight-man tag team match. Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and Jet Speed. Next week on Dynamite, they're going to take on Josh Alexander, Kyle Fletcher, and the Young Bucks. Fine. So the question now is, which member of the Don Callis family is going to challenge for the AEW World Championship? If you assume that there will be a World Championship match and not like a tag match or something, which would be fucking awful, in Toronto, then who challenges Hangman for the title? Because it doesn't look like it's going to be MJF. And the name that I come to is Konosuke Takeshita. Now, is Takeshita going to win the championship? No. But he would be the most logical choice. Kyle Fletcher is the TNT champion. Josh Alexander against Hangman Page? I mean, Josh Alexander is a great wrestler, but what have they done to really get him primed for a world title match? I can't see that. Or any other member of the Callis family, honestly, except for Okada or Takeshita. And Okada's already the unified champion. The hell are you going to put him in the ring with Hangman for? There's no point to that. Takeshita. Takeshita is the name that I keep coming to. Wardlow is standing in a suit right now, and he hasn't done jack shit to earn a world title match, so I don't think it's going to be him. So that could very well be the all-out match. Yeah, the fact that the Don Callis family manages 85% of the heels in the roster anyway makes it pretty obvious that it's going to be someone from that crew getting a title match. We had the Ops, Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Katsuyori Shibata defending their AEW Trios titles against Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. Hobbs, and by the way, yes, Roderick says, I thought Fletcher, if Takeshita faces Okada at All Out. Possible. I'm not sure they're doing Okada and Takeshita at All Out. Obviously, if they're going to do that match at All Out, then yes, that is what Takeshita will be doing. But as I just talked about, they may not want to do it there. They may want to do it at WrestleDream, or they may want to do it at Full Gear. And I also don't know how Takeshita's IWGP situation may affect, you know, a potential match with Okada and when they do it, because he just won the G1 Climax. And he has said that he wants to walk into the Tokyo Dome as the champion. That's what Zack Sabre Jr. did last year. He won the title in advance of Wrestle Kingdom. If they're going to do that with Takeshita, then he's going to be going back to Japan soon. So I wouldn't be getting him involved in a big program with Okada unless I knew that he was committed to being around for a while. And if he's not going to be, maybe it's better to just drag it out and delay it until the end of the year. So that's kind of the wild card here. I don't know when he's going back to Japan or if he's going to win the IWGP title, because that's a commitment in and of itself. How might that affect things? So his status is a little up in the air right now. But yes, you are correct. If they did the Okada match, then I guess Kyle Fletcher could work. You know, they're going to do Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher probably on TV next week. You know, that's not going to be an all-out match. So one of those two. Make your choice. Takeshita or Kyle Fletcher seems like the obvious choice. But anyway, we had the ops against Ricochet and GOA. Hobbs immediately no-sold Ricochet's offense. And he took his big bald head off with an overhand strike and a power slam that followed. Bishop made the blind tag, but he got run over by a shoulder tackle, which led to a Shibata tag. Ricochet got a cheap shot in from the apron, which led to Shibata getting the boots put to him on the outside, heading into commercial. After the break, Hobbs got a hot tag. He and Toa Leona traded some corner clotheslines. Joe makes the tag. He lights up Ricochet with a snap power slam and a running senton for a two count. Muscle Buster gets broken up by Toa Leona as Bishop Cone flew in with a shotgun dropkick and Toa Leona hit a pounce. Thankfully, it was not the same pounce he hit to Michael Oku on Sunday. Oh my God. Holy shit. Wasn't quite that bad. So Hobbs suffered the same fate here. And there was a springboard drop kick and a running shooting star by Ricochet on Joe. Shibata, though, broke up the cover. Shibata sank in a rear naked choke on Toa Leona, who rolled to the apron. Ricochet went up top, but he got cracked from behind by MVP, who ran out with his cane. And he whacked Ricochet, and then he ran away. Hobbs hit a spinebuster. Shibata followed with the PK, and then Joe sank in the coquina clutch for the submission. After the match, the ops left, and we hear the Hurt Syndicate's music. Here comes Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. They walk out. They brawl with the Gates of Agony. All four men brawl to the back, leaving Ricochet on the mat, all alone, licking his wounds in the ring all by himself to close out the segment. The match was nothing special. Hurt Syndicate now going to get their revenge on Ricochet and the Gates of Agony coming out of what we saw at Forbidden Door, which, you know, fine mid-card feud. It was time. It was time to get the belts off the Hurt Syndicate. I think that was the right move. Brody King and Bandido. There was no real indication tonight of what they will be doing or, you know, who they'll be defending against at All Out. Still time for that. So for all the directions we got tonight, there was nothing that really stood out to me as, okay, these are definitely, you know, the next in line. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, this, I can't say any of this gets me excited, but Hurt Syndicate, Ricochet, GOA, it's something for them to do. Something for them to do. Maybe MVP is going to wrestle here. Seems like he would, right? You would think they would do a trios match. Lashley, Benjamin, and MVP against Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. MVP is the one who came out and whacked him with his cane. Main event was Darby Allin against Claudio Castagnoli. Falls count anywhere in the building. As Claudio was walking backstage to make his entrance here, he didn't make it very far before Darby Allin leapt off of a loading trailer to attack him. Claudio threw him into a shopping cart and then crashed the shopping cart into a bunch of chairs that were set up. Then he grabbed a flat screen TV and he slammed Darby on top of that. Brought him out onto the entrance, not ramp, but the entrance area. Claudio delivered a giant swing into the barricade for a two count. Darby responded by flying through the ropes with a dive before scaling. They have these giant support beams, and he climbs one of the giant support beams and then does a coffin drop, falling backwards off of it onto Claudio on the floor, because it's Darby, and that's what he does. Darby does Darby things. What do you expect? In the ring now, Darby charged. Claudio hit a pop-up uppercut for two. Claudio demanded that the announce team clear out of harm's way. What is he going to do? He grabs Darby, and similar to what he did at Forbidden Door when he pressed him over his head and then tossed him into the side of the steel cage, he pressed Darby Allin over his head, he ran towards the ropes, and he just flew. He tossed Darby through the air. Darby lands on the announce desk, which didn't break. Or at least not the entire thing didn't break, but he landed on the table at a very awkward angle and bounced off of it, and it looked brutal because Darby takes these great brutal bumps because this guy is a fucking crash test dummy, and that's what he... And he's just a dummy, but he's a crash test dummy, and this is what he does. So he laid out there dead. Now, this was not as crazy as the Javon Evans bump. I didn't see the entire Heatwave card, but I did see that match. I saw that bump. I saw what Obafemi did to that man. I think with one arm, that was far crazier than what we saw here. And I'll say this too. When Claudio was backing up and he had Darby pressed over his head and he was going to launch him, I did have visions of Bam Bam Bigelow and Spike Dudley. So fortunately for the fans in the front row, I mean, not that Darby is a big man, but still, if a human being is launched at you at a decent rate of speed, I would not want to be sitting in the front row if I had a flying Darby Allin coming at me with a bloody ear. So I thought we might have a Bam Bam Spike Dudley moment here. But the announce desk broke his fall. So Claudio threw a bunch of chairs into the ring while setting tables up in the corners of the ring. Darby was desperately trying to fight back, and he managed to sink in a guillotine. Claudio powered up. Darby transitioned into a rear naked choke. Claudio got free. He charged. Darby, though, sidestepped, and Claudio crashed through a table in the corner. Darby started wearing him out with a chair. Placed it around his neck. He went up top, but he got cut off. Claudio, he stacks the chairs in the ring. So basically, it's like a pile of chairs. And he goes to the ropes, and he delivers an avalanche gut-wrench suplex off the top. And Darby lands right on the chairs. Only got a two count out of it. So Claudio is furious now, and he beels Darby onto the table, which didn't break, but then a powerbomb did break it. And again, Darby kicked out. Claudio exposed the corner turnbuckle. He wanted a slingshot. Darby, though, landed on his feet on the ropes, and then immediately delivered a bounce-back double stomp, which was kind of cool. Victory roll got a near fall. Claudio charged. Darby got a drop toe hold into the exposed buckle and then hit a code red for another two. Darby quickly went up top for a coffin drop, went back up, hit one more for good measure. And with that, he picked up the win over Claudio. When the match was over, Gabe Kidd hit the ring, planted Darby with an overhead suplex that dumped him right on top of his head. As John Moxley and Marina Shafir, they walk out to join in. They're directing traffic. Kidd picked up Darby, who shot a double leg on Moxley. He got in a few shots, but Kidd pulled him away. Darby sent Kidd and Moxley colliding into one another before bailing, and he ran out of that building. He hightailed it out of there. And Moxley ultimately just left with Marina Shafir and Gabe Kidd to end the show. So that was a pretty lame ending there. Not saying it wasn't smart of him knowing he was outnumbered. Like, if you think about it logically, there are a lot of baby faces. Like, we saw this with Hangman earlier in the show. Hangman is out there by himself, and he's in the ring, and now he is surrounded by, what, three or four different members of the Don Callis family? And so what does he do? He's like, ah, fuck it. And he does a slingshot dive out onto Josh Alexander, and then what happened? He got overwhelmed. So I don't fault Darby for hightailing it out of there as quickly as possible, but I don't know. The show ends with the baby face running away. Kind of lame. Kind of lame, but it also struck me that you had Kenny Omega and Hangman Page both in the building, and None of them, including Kenny, who was actually tag team partners on Sunday with Darby, thought enough to come out and help this man. Apparently, that's where the friendship and the respect starts and stops. At Forbidden Door, that's it. After that, you're on your own, brother. Kenny came out to help Hangman, but they couldn't give two shits about Darby when he was being outnumbered by the Death Riders, who spent months, by the way, trying to basically destroy this company. Even though they said they're not here to destroy the company, but they were there to destroy the company. So anyway, Darby had no help, but that's how the show went off the air. The match itself, look, it got a little crazy there. I liked it for what it was. I think they could have done more with the Falls Count Anywhere stipulation. Tends to be one of my favorite stipulations if you get creative with the environment. And for the most part, all both of these companies ever do when they have these rare Falls Count Anywhere type matches, as far as like one-on-one regular Falls Count, I'm not talking like Anarchy in the Arena. Anarchy in the Arena, you can get creative and Stadium Stampede and stuff like that. But I just wish they would get more creative sometimes with matches like this in terms of the backstage environment, going out into the street a little bit and then coming back inside the streets of South Philly. I mean, I don't know. There's things you could have done. They kept the action for the most part to the ringside area, did some crazy shit, and it was done in the spirit of the old ECW. You know, yeah, there was no, you know, bloodbath, barbed wire, which, by the way, we get all that shit all the time in AEW. We didn't get any of that here. But in terms of the crazy shit that Darby was doing and all the chaos and the weapons and everything, this was their homage to the old ECW, you know, being here in their old stomping grounds. And then as far as the story here, you know, Darby beats Claudio. There's still Wheeler Yuta, but I mean, who cares? Gabe Kidd, I guess, is sort of the next. If this was like a Mortal Kombat game and Darby is moving up the mountain, Gabe Kidd would be up next. I guess, what does that make John Moxley? Raiden? Or was it Shang Tsung? Shang Tsung, right, was the last one. There's a comparison for you. So I guess that's the story, and he'll have to go through Gabe Kidd, and at that point, we'll see what Darby does to try to convince Moxley to say yes to this match It All Out. There were some chance, I will point this out, there was some chance here at the end for Eddie Kingston, who is very close to being back, but clearly is not medically cleared, because this really would have been the perfect spot. You want to have like a big post-pay-per-view surprise return or debut, in this case a return, this would have been the perfect night. In Philadelphia, at the old ECW arena, people chanting his name. He's got that history with the Death Riders. He's been gone for over a year. And boom, there's Eddie Kingston. Darby needs some help. And out comes Eddie Kingston. The fact that he wasn't there tells me he's definitely not cleared yet. It's not like, oh, he's cleared, but we're waiting for a creative reason to bring him back. Like, this was it. This was it. So it's unfortunate that he wasn't ready yet to come back, just because not only everything I just said, but Gabe Kidd's out there. And Gabe Kidd is the one he was wrestling when he broke his leg last year in that New Japan match. As far as the show overall, I thought it set the stage for some of the key angles and stories that we're going to be getting heading into All Out. Hangman and the Callis family seems to be the play, because they're going to put off the MJF rematch. MJF is going back to Mark Briscoe for now. Darby is trying to get his hands on John Moxley. The Hurt Syndicate is trying to get revenge on Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, right? So we know that. There's heat continuing to build here between Takeshita and Okada. And we have Cope and Christian, right, getting their match against FTR, which we all knew was coming. And now that match is official for Toronto. So it's important for AEW to, you know, pick up with some new faces, because Swerve Strickland is out. He just had surgery today. Successful meniscus surgery. I don't know exactly how long that's going to be. It could be up to 6 months. He's going to be gone for a while. Even if it was half that, right? He's gone for a while. And Will Ospreay is gone for longer than that. Depending on the type of neck surgery that he has, because we still don't know. Is it a fusion? Is it something less serious than a fusion? That will dictate how long he's gone for. If it's a fusion, we're not going to see Will Ospreay for a year. If it's almost anything else, he could be back within a few months. But those are two key baby faces on the roster that you're losing. So the timing couldn't be any better to get back somebody like an Eddie Kingston, for example. And this is an opportunity for Tony Khan to plug in some people into positions that maybe, if those guys weren't out, maybe they wouldn't be able to be plugged into. But to me, I just don't understand why you would bring back a Wardlow on Sunday and not do more with him on this first show coming out of that pay-per-view. To me, that was one of the biggest fails of the show. And then not a whole lot of, you know, development or, you know, storyline movement when it comes to the two women's champions. Again, it looks like Mercedes and Alex Windsor are going to continue their feud, but not a whole lot going on there. And Toni Storm was in a pre-taped segment with Mina Shirakawa that did more to promote Mina's Ring of Honor match on Friday than who Toni Storm is going to be wrestling next. I don't know. I don't know who that's going to be. But on the whole, I thought it was a solid show. Nothing spectacular, but nothing awful. Yeah, there was some good wrestling. And I thought in terms of the key angles and stories, I felt like they did what they needed to do. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. How would you grade this episode of Dynamite from the 2300 arena? On a scale of A through D, let's take a look at the report card here. 27% give the show an A grade. 20.5% give it a D, or I'm sorry, a B. 19% give it a C. 33.6% give the show a D. At Solomonster is where you can vote in the poll. Yeah, the Juliet, if it was a torn ACL, he would be out for a lot longer. It also depends on how badly the meniscus was torn. I think there were grades to it. I don't think we're going to see Swerve for at least a few months. I'd be shocked if we saw him back before that. Get those likes up. We're right around 330-ish on the likes. We need 400 minimum if we're going to do Be the Booker. So that's going to be up to you guys. Let me dive back into the early super chats here just to make sure I don't miss anybody. See what's going on here with your messages. GMB starting us off here. H on your chest, green mask. Oh, you're the Hamburglar. Thank you. Dried Chicken says, I got a chance to hear your full opinion on the Raja Jackson incident. Says he agrees with me. Raja has to go to jail. I'm upset with him and the promotion for allowing this incident to happen, failing to see the red flags. Yeah, again, if you missed it, during Dynamite, I uploaded a 25-minute segment. First time I've really formally addressed it all week. Up on the channel right now, this very channel, talking about that entire incident, some new information. There's an update on Psycho Stew as well, and some thoughts on RVD and Mark Henry and a bunch of other things. So I would encourage you to go check out that video if you have not already done so. Joseph Stewart, buy or sell. Dr. No, or From Russia with Love. I'll go from Russia with Love. Buy or sell, Magneto or Dr. Doom? Magneto. You know who looked great in this new Fantastic Four movie? Galactus. Dry Chicken, pick your poison, spicy peppers or sour warheads? Spicy peppers are out, so I'm going with sour warheads. Also, let me tell you how WWE can punish Becky Lynch after disrespecting Ozzy Osbourne. She won't lose the belt. She will endure some hard bumps. That's funny. You must have been watching a different show than I was watching, because I don't know. I don't know what some people were watching. I certainly didn't see her disrespect Ozzy Osbourne on Monday night. Did you? You must have been watching a different show than I was watching, because I didn't see any of that. Joseph, Did you know Sean Young almost played Vicky Vale in Batman 89? I did not. Who's Sean Young again? Did you know Annette Bening almost played Catwoman in Batman Returns? No, I did not. Did you know Bill Murray almost played Batman and Michael J. Fox almost played Robin in a Batman... Boy, you are just the Batman encyclopedia here, aren't you? In a Batman movie that was almost made in 1985. That's crazy. Fried Chicken says Don Callis imitating Vicky Guerrero was funny. Yeah? I just thought it was annoying. Which I guess was the point. But it was very annoying. Joseph says, do you remember the Flintstones movie with John Goodman as Fred Flintstone and Rick Moranis as Barney? I do. But that's not even what I really remember about the movie so much. I remember Halle Berry. That was my favorite part of that movie. I remember her. Bobbert's Reviews with a 22. This super chat is Solid Monster's reaction to the Yellow Jackets. Maybe you should hire Wheeler Yuta with a kendo stick to keep the bees in. You know what? That's a great idea. They won't be able to climb into the house if I do that. You know, you make a very good point. I will have to, I don't know, though. He may not like me very much after all the remarks I've made. But if I grease some palms, I think he'll be okay with it. But yes, Wheeler Yuta with a kendo stick. It was staring me in the face the entire time. Why didn't I think of that? That's a great idea. These wasps won't stand a chance. Joseph says, do you remember Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas? It was about how Fred met Wilma and Fred and Wilma getting married. I never saw it. The other movie I saw, that I didn't see. Were you a fan of the Batman Beyond TV show? No. Do you remember Batman Beyond Return of the Joker? No. Joseph. Hager equals AEW Ryback / Rybitch. Rybitch. Joseph says, my thoughts and prayers are with DDP today. Yes, I did see that DDP was in the hospital. And even as he's laying there in the hospital, he's showing people, he's stretching. He's got his legs up in the air. Dude, if I did that, like, I would tear every muscle of my leg. Like, because apparently he has had an issue with AFib with his heart. So he's in the hospital, but he's in the bed. You know, his wife is recording him and he's lifting his leg up. You know, you got to do this. And he's still doing DDPY from his hospital bed there. But yes, best wishes to DDP. I'll never forget years ago, I was having an issue. I was doing the DDPY, which I have to get back to. One of the things, honestly, that's discouraged me, and it's still an issue when I do it, is that I can't get my heart rate up to where I need it to be. I have to, like, do other things that are not in the workout in front of me in order to generate a higher heart rate. And I'm like, I don't know why. I mentioned it on the podcast. I'll never forget. I'm standing at the bus stop getting ready to come home from work one night. Had to be in the winter. It's just pitch black outside. And I get a call on my phone and I answer it and it's DDP. Says, yo, Jason, heard you're having trouble with the heart rate. I said, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, get it up when I do these workouts and it's not going high enough. And he's telling me, you got to grip those toes. You got to grip those fucking toes. I'm like, just the way he said it just cracked me up. Just made my whole night. But yeah, still had issues with it after that. But we'll have to get back to that. But yeah, best wishes to DDP. Oh, man. Let's see here. Kev Carroll Kev Carroll. How would you feel about Hangman versus Takeshita versus Omega at All Out? Feels like that's where this could go. I mean, I don't know. Do we really need that? Do we really need Hangman defending against Kenny and going back to Kenny and Takeshita, which we've done already? I mean, it was great. I don't know. I mean, it's a potential direction. It's not what I was thinking. I don't think it's necessary, but it's possible. That's what Tony wants to do. Joseph says, what were the plans for both Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas's Uncle Howdy if Bray had lived? I don't know, but I'm almost sure they would have become tag team champions. I think they would have become WWE tag team champions. C's says, who books the women better, Tony Khan or Triple H? Oh, man. They both have their ups and downs and their pros and cons. At the moment, though? I mean, I have some real issues with the way Julia is being booked as the U.S. champion on SmackDown. I mean, really. I mean, I'll go Tony Khan right now. Maybe that'll change once we get Bianca back and, you know, we get past some of this melodramatic shit that we're seeing on TV with the Kabuki Warriors and some of these segments. We'll see. Who has the better women's division? WWE or AEW? They both have a lot of great talent, though, in these divisions. I'm going to go WWE. But they got some real talent in both places. I mean, you could definitely make money with the divisions on either show or in either promotion. And there's many times, frankly, and more so in WWE, I feel like, of late, where the women can carry the show. Where the women's segments or the women's matches end up being the highlight of the show. That is something that I have noticed more with WWE than I have with AEW. Dry Chicken says the Death Riders are like cockroaches that won't die. No, that's TNA. TNA is a cockroach that will outlive us all. Brandon Proctor, if I had 16 yellow jackets in my living room, I would grab a flamethrower. So would I if I had one. Rest in peace, Hook's old banger theme. Yeah, that's it. No more Action Bronson. It's all done. Duff's Vids, why was the birthday cake hard as a rock? It was a marble cake. Very good. Thank you, Duffs. Glad to have Duffs with us. Terrible Dry Chicken says, imagine Bailey walking out to the ring with all the things she said by tattoo. Victoria's theme song. That was a good theme. I don't think they're going to go back in time, though. I think they're going to want to look forward and give her a Def Rebel special. That sounds like a great idea. We got to make a meme out of this. That sounds like a great idea, but I have a better idea. We'll Def Rebel it. Yeah. Duff's Vids, how much does a pirate pay for corn? A buccaneer. Death Scythe says, hey, Solomonster, did you watch? Oh, God, you know, I did. If Mario Kart was a reality TV show, yeah, no. Yeah, okay, I'm going to right now make a note. I knew I forgot something from the other night. Thank you for reminding me. I will definitely check that out. I have not seen it yet. Duff's Viz, what do you call a cow that masturbates? Beef Stroganoff. Beef Stroganoff. MacTub, why do you think Edge's return at WWE underwhelmed? He did have some really good matches during that run, right? I'm not saying he didn't, but it just wasn't exciting, and he's not the same performer that he used to be. And just some of the stories that he was involved in just were not, you know, terribly interesting. You know, some of the stuff he was involved in was just very boring. You know, time passes you by sometimes. Maybe it had to do with some of the people that he was matched up with. I mean, maybe it just wasn't a good fit. I don't know. But that last run that he had, I mean, he had some really good matches with Seth Rollins that I enjoyed. But beyond that, I mean, there just really wasn't a whole lot there to be excited about. Also, why couldn't Austin transcend WWE like Hogan and Rock? I always wonder, like, he had that cameo on that Nash Bridges TV show, which was a big hit at the time on CBS. And he played that character, Jake Cage. And there were some rumors that they wanted to have him star in a spinoff series, which I'm sure Vince would not have allowed. Because he was still their top star at the time. He's not going to let him just go off and lose him to Hollywood. I don't know. I mean, had he gone off and had his own spinoff series on CBS, would that have opened up other opportunities for him? I don't know. I mean, Austin, as far as his, like, acting chops, if we're just talking, like, movies in Hollywood, I mean, he doesn't have that same ability that guys like Cena and Rock and Batista have. But he could have transcended in other ways, but, like, what would those ways have been? What would he have gone on to be if not, like, a big movie star? Like, wasn't going to go play another sport. He wasn't going to be a game show host, even though he kind of did become a game show host, right? He did the Broken Skull Challenge. He did transcend wrestling in some ways. He just never transcended in a way where he became, like, a household name outside of wrestling. You know, some guys are huge stars in wrestling, and then outside of wrestling, it just doesn't translate. Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, I can't tell you exactly why. I don't think it was any one particular reason. Dry Chicken AEW is taking baby steps with Wardlow's reset. Ah. So you've wasted 3 years, but now we're going to take baby steps to do what? Fuck it all up again? We're not talking about, like, baby steps is one thing, but, like, he just returned. There should have been a more impactful segment to explain it. Let us hear him in his own words. The guy's been gone forever. That's what I'm talking about. There's no excuse for that. Also, Tony Khan added, the winners get Tony Khan's private jet. Sure. And then you can shoot some vignettes with people boarding the private jet and try to have some fun with it. When he has these matches where it's like, it's the $400,000, like, who gives a fuck, man? Who cares? It's so stupid. It's just dumb. It's stupid. It means nothing. Also, Darby Allin is like Gumby. Well, then who's Pokey? You got Gumby, you gotta have Pokey. Phil, the truth. As a 33 and a two month year old, I'm tired of these poophead kids complaining about wrestlers having forced pushes. I mean, isn't every push forced? This is true. Boots, will Darby take Renee Paquette from Mox? I feel like she is an enabler. Uh-oh. Boots has an issue with Renee. That's not good. You leave Renee alone. Renee is great. Reconson has been a Sound Off legend here for 45 months. Eric Matthews is Batman and Batman Beyond. Must watch. Oh, Will Friedle? Since we want to go down memory lane, remember Mars Attacks, Mr. Baseball, Look Who's Talking, or Airheads? P.S. I love you solo. Thank you, Reconson. Look Who's Talking, yes. Look Who's Talking, too. Mars Attacks. Airheads, wasn't really a fan. And same with Mr. Baseball. So thank you, Reconson. Good to hear from you, brother. Rican Sundown, I believe, in the Sunshine State, right? If I'm not mistaken. Got the sign on TV that one time at Daly's Place. Thank you guys for taking my mind off of all of the bee and the wasp nonsense here. It's been a very stressful week. Hopefully we're able to put that behind us. I guess we'll find out tomorrow. So it was good to take my mind off that for 90 minutes here or thereabout. We didn't hit the goal for Be the Booker tonight, so we'll have to try again on Friday. Friday, SmackDown on Friday. Where is SmackDown on Friday? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure SmackDown is airing early on Friday. So I will be watching SmackDown earlier with my VPN on Friday, which means probably an 8 p.m. review. So just be aware of that. Probably going to go earlier than usual by a couple of hours on the SmackDown recap. This weekend will be episode 927 of The Sound Off, which will be going up on Saturday. So that's going to be a day earlier than usual because Sunday is Clash in Paris, and I will be live 8 p.m. Sunday night. We'll have the full Clash in Paris review. Monday, Raw's in Paris. That's a 2 p.m. start on Netflix. After that, I think things pretty much go back to normal. I think we get back on our normal schedule, our normal rotation at that point. So just bear with me and join me for all of it. Closing out August. I want to close out August in a strong way. So hopefully we can do that. Be well. Stay safe. Go back and check out the clip. 25-minute segment just posted. Brand new, a couple of hours ago, talking about the entire Raja Jackson incident with Psycho Stu, which has just made national headlines this week. And there's been some new stuff that's come out in the last few days. I cover it all. Go check that out. It's up on the channel right now. So until then, I'll see you guys Friday. Take care.